Welcome back to the Deep Dive. I want to start with a premise that might sound a little annoying, but just bear with me for a second.
Okay.
You know how everyone buys a gym membership in January? They go maybe three times, and then by March, they're wondering why they're not an Olympic athlete.
The classic buying the tool versus doing the work problem.
Exactly. And we're looking at a stack of research today that, well, it basically argues the corporate world has been doing that exact same thing with AI for the last couple of years.
Right.
We're diving into the orgchange.ai dispatch, and just to ground everyone, the date on this dispatch is February 2026.
And that context is so important. I mean, we are 2 years deep into the generative AI boom.
Oh, yeah.
The honeymoon phase is way over. The whole, wow, I can write a poem phase is long, long gone.
And now we're in the, let's call it the messy phase.
Yeah.
The dispatch makes this really bold assertion right out of the gate.
It does.
It says AI adoption is no longer a technology program. It is a work redesign and an operating model reset.
It's a heavy phrase, operating model reset, but I think it's spot on. The core mission of this deep dive is really to look past the hype of the new tools, you know, the faster chips, the smarter models,
right?
And look at how leading organizations are physically restructuring their human systems. We're talking workflows, decision rights, even the org charts themselves.
The thesis here is pretty stark, actually. Leaders are writing these massive checks for the technology, but the scale, the actual ROI, it's being won or lost in the human system.
Yep.
It's about how you organize the people, not how you organize the servers.
Exactly right. I mean, if you drop a Ferrari engine into a go-kart, you don't get a faster car. You just get a broken go-kart.
And that's what we're seeing.
That's what the data is showing.
So let's get into that mindset shift. Mm-hmm. The dispatch opens with a really fascinating look at Dell, and specifically a quote from their COO, Jeff Clark, from back in January 2026.
Oh, this quote is going to be in business textbooks for years. He said, "This is a comprehensive change, not a gradual transition." But then he dropped the hammer.
Yeah, he did.
He said, "Once we start operating in the new way on May 3, we won't go back."
I love the specificity of that. May 3, not sometime in Q2, not, oh, when we feel ready. May 3. Why is that specific date so important?
Well, it's psychological warfare against the status quo, really. In most big companies, you have what you could call pilot purgatory.
Mm.
You test AI in marketing, you test it over in HR, but you keep the old systems running just in case.
Right, the safety net.
By giving a hard date, Clark is signaling a burn the ships moment. He is telling the entire organization the old way of working isn't just deprecated. After May 3rd, it is unauthorized.
It forces a standard. It just stops the debate.
It does. But, and this is a huge but, you can't just declare a date and expect magic to happen. You have to redesign the work before you get there.
That brings up a quote from Nelson Repenning at MIT Sloan, which was also in the source material. He said, "You can't automate the process of implementing automation."
That line just stopped me in my tracks. It's so true. You can use AI to automate a task like, I don't know, writing an email or coding a script.
Sure.
But you cannot use AI to decide which task to automate or how that automation changes the job description of the person sitting next to the machine.
Those are messy political human decisions.
They are. And humans have to make them. And if your leadership structure isn't set up to make those decisions quickly, you just stall out.
Speaking of leadership structures, let's talk about Moderna, because they did something to their org chart that I frankly have not seen before.
I know.
They merged HR and IT.
The oil and water of the corporate world.
Right. I mean, usually HR is over here doing performance reviews and IT is in the basement trying to keep the servers from melting.
Yeah.
But Moderna just combined them.
And they created a unified role, a chief people and digital technology officer. When you look at why, it makes perfect sense for where we are in 2026.
It does.
They realized you can't roll out a digital tool without redesigning the human job. If IT rolls out an AI agent and HR hasn't updated the incentives or the training for the people using it, the tool fails.
So by merging the leadership, they align the workforce strategy directly with the digital execution.
It creates a single operating model for how work gets done. It just reduces that friction between here's a new tool and wait, how does this change my daily targets?
It treats the employee experience and the digital experience as the same thing.
Which, let's be honest, they basically are now.
They really are.
Yeah.
But let's zoom in a bit. We've talked about the C-suite changes at Dell and Moderna.
Yeah.
I want to talk about the actual jobs on the ground. Because the fear narrative that robots are coming for your job thing, it's still out there.
It is.
But the examples in the dispatch, they show something different. It's not about elimination, it's about evolution.
It's a shift in where the value is. That pricing example from the major logistics organization is the perfect case study.
So this company had a role, pricing analyst, and they didn't fire them. They changed the title to pricing strategist. So is that just a title inflation, just making them feel better?
No, it's a fundamental shift in the day-to-day reality of the job. Think about what a pricing analyst used to do. 80% of their week was just data wrangling. Pulling CSV files, cleaning the rows, building the pivot table, running a regression model in Excel. The analysis was actually manual labor.
Yeah.
Now the AI does all of that in seconds. It pulls the data, cleans it, runs the prediction. So if you keep the human doing the old job, they literally have nothing to do. But by shifting them to strategists, you change the output.
So what does the strategist do all day?
They interrogate the model. The AI says, raise prices by 4% on this route. The strategist looks at that and asks, okay, the math says 4%, but we know there's a port strike looming and our relationship with this client is a little rocky. Do we actually do it?
So the human becomes the governance layer. They are the force multiplier applying judgment to the AI's logic.
Precisely. They move up the value chain. But that requires the human to actually have that judgment. You can't hide behind the busy work of Excel anymore.
And we see a similar split happening in the airline industry. The source mentions an air carrier using AI agents for the high volume stuff.
Yeah, the rebooking, baggage routing, the stuff that makes you want to pull your hair out when you're standing in line at the airport.
Totally. And for the listener, just think about the last time you had a flight canceled. You don't want a human to type on a keyboard for 10 minutes to find a new route. You just want it done instantly. The AI does that.
It does. But the frontline staff, they didn't disappear. Their role shifted to service recovery.
Service recovery. It sounds like a technical term, but it's actually the most intensely human part of the job, isn't it?
It's handling the exceptions. The crying family who missed their connection because of a medical emergency. The unaccompanied minor who's scared.
Situations where the policy might say no, but empathy says yes.
Exactly. And AI is terrible at breaking the rules for compassionate reasons. It just follows the logic. The human is there to handle the emotion, the nuance, the gray areas. So the airline isn't removing humans. They're pointing the humans at the problems that actually require humanity.
It really clarifies the division of labor. AI gets the logic. Humans get the judgment and the empathy. But there's another term in this section that we need to define because it's buzzing everywhere in 2026. Agentic AI.
Yes. This is the big leap from the chatbots we saw back in 2023.
The financial services example in our notes mentions using it to tighten the operating cadence. What does that even mean versus, you know, just using ChatGPT to write an email?
So generative AI creates content, text, images, code. Agentic AI takes action. It has agency. It can go into your calendar, read your email, open a spreadsheet, and actually do something.
And in this case, the agent is listening to a video call, capturing action items, drafting reminders,
and assigning the tasks in the project management software. Sounds like a glorified secretary, but the impact is structural. The operating cadence is the heartbeat of the company. How fast does information move?
Right.
If you have to wait for a human to type up notes, send an email, and chase people down, that introduces lag. It's friction.
The coordination task.
Exactly. The agent removes that task. It tightens the loop. So the team isn't spending 20% of their week on project management overhead. They're spending that time on the actual work.
Okay, so we've covered the office jobs, the analysts, the service agents. But this deep dive takes a hard turn into the physical world. And frankly, this is where the sci-fi element really kicks in for me. We aren't just talking about screens anymore.
No, we're talking about embedded AI. And that global mining company example is just wild.
They're putting AI into the drills and the trucks.
And not just to drive them. The equipment becomes an intelligent platform. The drill knows the geology it's boring into better than the operator does. The truck knows its own maintenance schedule.
So it's using sensors and predictive analytics to know when a part is going to fail before it fails.
Right. Which changes the role of the engineering team entirely. They aren't fixers anymore.
What are they?
They become system supervisors. They aren't reacting to a breakdown. They are managing a health score. It changes the norms of the job from being covered in grease to looking at a dashboard.
And then there's the warehouse example. This one really stuck with me because I think we've all seen videos of warehouse robots following those little magnetic strips on the floor.
Deterministic robots. Go to A, pick up a box, go to B. Very simple.
But the source describes robots with autonomy. They decide where to store items to maximize floor space.
Yeah, this is the Tetris analogy. The robot looks at the inventory coming in, looks at the available space, and decides, I'm going to put this pallet here because I know I won't need it for 3 days. It's optimizing the floor plan in real time.
And crucially, it's doing that without a human telling it what to do.
That's the operating model reset again. Traditionally, a human logistics planner would sit in an office and map out where everything goes. If the robot does that, what does the human do?
They focus on safety oversight and system monitoring.
Exactly. You don't need a traffic cop anymore. You need a safety inspector. The human role elevates to governance. You are managing a fleet of autonomous agents, not telling a forklift driver to turn left.
It seems like governance is the word of the day here. Whether it's pricing or robots, the human moves from doer to governor.
That's a great way to synthesize it. And speaking of governance, we have to zoom out to the global picture. The Dispatch brings up a trend called sovereign AI.
This sounded a bit like a spy novel term when I first read it.
It does, doesn't it? But it's incredibly practical. We have a telecommunications company mentioned that is building in-country AI stack.
Why not just use the big, famous American models we all know and use?
Two reasons. Compliance and control. If you're a telco in Europe or Asia, you're dealing with very strict data sovereignty laws. You often cannot pipe your customer data into a model that's hosted in California. It's just illegal.
So the one big model dream is kind of dead.
For enterprise, yeah, pretty much. The trend is moving toward SLMs, small language models.
Can you unpack that? I mean, we usually hear that bigger is better with AI.
Mm-hmm.
Why would a company want a small model?
Because a massive model like GPT-5 knows everything about everything. It knows French poetry and Python code and 14th century history. But a telco doesn't need that.
Right.
It needs a model that knows telecom regulations and the local language perfectly.
Mm.
An SLM is cheaper to run, it lives on your own server, so the data never leaves the building, and it's much easier to govern.
It totally reshapes how global deployments work. You aren't rolling out one massive brain for the world, you're building localized compliance stacks.
And this caught some companies completely off guard. There's a note about a European bank in here. They had built all this governance for traditional AI, you know, fraud detection algorithms.
Just math equations, basically.
Right. And then large language models showed up and just broke everything. They realized their old rules didn't apply to generative tech. It forced a total reset on how they fund and build their infrastructure.
It's so interesting how geography plays into this. We have these notes on GCC's Global Capability Centers, specifically in places like Bengaluru, India.
This is one of the most underreported stories in the AI shift. For 20 years, we thought of these places as outsourcing. You sent the repetitive back office work there to save money.
But looking at Target, Lowe's, and Walmart in the notes,
mm-hmm.
that is not what's happening anymore.
Not at all. Walmart is using their India GCC as a transformation engine for pricing and inventory optimization. Lowe's is running self-checkout rollouts from Bengaluru.
And Target calls it a second headquarters.
Exactly. Because that is where the talent is.
Gotcha.
If you're doing an operating model reset, you often find that your engineering teams in these GCCs are faster at adopting the new tools than the legacy teams in the US or Europe.
They're becoming hubs of innovation, not just support.
That's right.
So we've covered mindset, roles, physical tools, the global map. But for the listener, the person actually trying to manage this chaos, how do you know where you stand? The Dispatch includes a diagnostic tool, the orgchange.ai 9-square grid.
I love a good framework. This grid basically visualizes the intersection of people, process, and technology against the stages of change, urgency, changing, and refreezing.
Okay, let's pick out the scary squares, the places where companies are getting stuck. Square one, people and urgency.
This is the disconnect square. The stats here are pretty anxiety-inducing. You have 82.7% of people who believe AI is transformational. So urgency is high. Everyone knows this is a big deal.
Yeah.
But 93.2% cite culture and change management as the main barrier. So you have a workforce that is terrified or excited, but absolutely no mechanism to manage that change.
Which creates paralysis.
Total paralysis.
Then there's square seven, technology and vision. The technical debt problem.
86% of CFOs say tech debt is a moderate or significant barrier. And this goes right back to that Ferrari engine and a go-kart analogy. You can have the best AI vision in the world, but if your data is trapped in a legacy ERP system from 2005 that nobody has the password for, you're stuck.
Jeff Clark from Dell mentioned that too clean data is the prerequisite. It's the boring work you have to do before you get to do the cool work.
Yes. And finally, square five. process, and changing, the orchestration gap.
This one shocked me. The stat is that only a small fraction, what, 3%, are actively implementing agentic orchestration at scale.
3%. Think about that. Everyone is talking about agents. Everyone is building prototypes. But almost nobody has figured out how to weave them into a reliable, scalable workflow that runs across the whole company. That is the frontier.
That's where the advantage is.
If you want a competitive advantage in 2026, that is it. Don't just build the bot. Build the orchestration that lets the bot work.
So if the tech is hard and the process is lagging, we have to come back to the people, because ultimately humans are the ones who have to use this stuff. There's a section on the human element and power skills that I actually found really encouraging.
It's the antidote to all the doom and gloom.
We have Mark Benioff from Salesforce mentioned here, and he emphasizes that the human must be at the center, delegation, intervention, and tuning.
Those are the new verbs of work. You aren't doing the task. You are delegating it to the AI, intervening when it goes wrong, and tuning it to be better next time.
There's this great anecdote about Haley Galt, an account executive. She used a Slack bot to reduce 2 hours of industry research down to 2 minutes.
Which is a standard efficiency story, right? I save time.
But wait, it wasn't just the time savings. She said she went into customer conversations significantly more prepared and confident.
That's the key. The AI didn't just give her time back to drink more coffee. It gave her competence. It made her better at the human part of her job, the actual conversation. She wasn't scrambling for facts. She was focused on the client.
And Pearson, the education company, they identified a meta skill for this new workforce.
The skill to learn.
It sounds a bit like a poster on a guidance counselor's wall. Adaptability.
It does sound generic until you look at the pace of change. Pearson added AI skill to their formal framework, but they realized the specific tools change every 6 months. If you learn how to use a specific image generator today, that knowledge might be totally obsolete by Christmas.
So the skill isn't knowing the tool. The skill is learning the new tool quickly.
Exactly. If you're hiring based on, I know how to use Excel, you're hiring for the past. You need to hire for, I can figure out whatever replaces Excel next week. That fluidity is the only currency that really holds value now.
So if we pull this all together, the mission of this deep dive was to look past the hype. And the message I'm getting is that the AI project isn't really about the AI.
No, it's about the unfreezing.
The unfreezing of old habits, the unification of data, and the redesign of roles.
You have to decide what the human does now. And that is not a technical question. That is a leadership question.
Which brings us right back to where we started with that really haunting insight from MIT Sloan. I think we should end on that note because it sums up the whole challenge perfectly.
Yes. The quote is, if you cannot automate the decision of where to apply AI, does your organization actually have the human leadership structure to make those decisions?
And that's the chilling part. The tech can do almost anything, but it can't tell you what it should do.
Or how to reorganize your company to let it do it. That's still on you.
So to everyone listening, don't look at your server rack. Okay. Look at your org chart. Look at your team. Is it built for the reality of 2026 or is it still built for 2019? Because May 3rd is coming for all of us eventually.
It certainly is.
Thanks for diving in with us. We'll see you on the next one.